Today's service is all about church. It's my pleasure to serve as the minister of a thriving church congregation. So this morning I wanted to reflect both upon that and celebrate that with you. And I'd like to begin with some observations made by the most famous of all authors, Anonymous. A thriving church focuses on what can be. A surviving church focuses on the way we've always done it. A thriving church always has new people joining. A surviving church rarely changes in membership. In a thriving church, leadership rotates and new leaders emerge. In a surviving church, leaders stay the same for many years, and when it does change, it's not a natural progression. A thriving church always has more ideas in the works than it can afford. Surviving churches start with the idea we should think small because there's never enough money. A thriving church makes connections with other groups in the community for their mutual benefit. A surviving church keeps to itself. A thriving church is visible and its endeavors are well understood and supported by the congregation. A surviving church holds information within itself, and the congregation has no particular interest in its agenda. A thriving church evangelizes. A surviving church fossilizes. As a church, we are in a good place. We can say that our hearts are in a holy place. We're blessed with love and amazing grace. We trust in each other's wisdom, and we listen to each other's ideas and stories. And in our time of worship, something stirs within, and we feel the power of this faith. We try to breathe in peace, but sometimes it's difficult to find that peace. When life is in turmoil, when the world is at war, when things are a struggle, when we're anxious or when we're ill, when friends or family are having a difficult time, when hate and prejudice still rear their ugly faces, when so much is left undone, sometimes it feels like there is no oxygen of peace to fill our lungs. Then we must breathe more deeply and find the peace, breathing in beyond all the struggle, drawing air to fill our lungs from the place of peace that our hearts know but our minds conceal. And then we must exhale love. Love to meet the challenges, the pain, the hurt, the hate, the lack of tolerance and acceptance, the love that cures, the love that conquers fear, the love that endures all things, the love that never dies. Breathe in peace now to calm your soul and to prepare you to do the most important thing you can ever do. And you can do it with every breath. Breathe out love. Breathe in peace. Breathe out love.
Keep on singing loudly. Keep on singing.
morning I'd like to share a reading from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's part of a sermon called The Three Dimensions of a Complete Life that he delivered in Pasadena, California in 1960. Many, many centuries ago, a man by the name of John was in prison out on a lonely, obscure island called Patmos. And in such a setting, he was deprived of every freedom but for the freedom to think. And so out there in that dark and desolate situation, he had a rendezvous with eternity. And he looked up and he imagined that he saw something. He wrote it over in the book of Revelations. He said, "I saw a new heaven and a new earth descending out of the heaven from God. I saw the new Jerusalem." One of the greatest glories of this new city that John saw was its completeness. It was not partial or one-sided, but it was complete in all three of its dimensions. And so describing that city over in the 21st chapter of Revelation, the 16th verse, John says this, "The length and the breadth and the height are all equal." In other words, this new city of God, this city of ideal humanity, is not an unbalanced entity, but complete on all sides. Now, John is saying something quite significant here. For many of us, this book of Revelations is a difficult book, puzzling to decode, and we tend to think of it as something of a great enigma, wrapped in mystery. And I guess if you look at the book of Revelations as a record of actual historical occurrences, it is a difficult book, shrouded with impenetrable mysteries. But if you look beneath the peculiar jargon of the vocabulary of the author and the prevailing symbolism, you'll see in the book of Revelations many eternal truths which forever challenge us. And one such truth is the truth of this text. For what John is really saying is this, that life as it should be and life at its best is life that is complete on all sides. Well, as many of you know, Malcolm and I have been building a house in San Miguel Allende, Mexico, for the past couple of years, 27 months at this point to be exact. But it is just about finished today, and it seems hard for me to believe how it's all happened. It started with this blank patch of dirt, and a foundation was, footing was poured, and then bricks started to arrive. Not a few bricks, but thousands of bricks. I know tens of thousands of bricks. Masons were laying bricks. Laborers were mixing mortar by hand and carrying big hordes of it to the masons. And by arranging the bricks in the right place, building a wall this way and one that way, a structure began to emerge. Today, you can't see a single brick at our house. Instead, you see a beautiful, complete house. But I remember the bricks and how important it was to put them in the right place at the right time. Here at church, we also built a wonderful structure, another kind of house. Not so much of bricks, but of wood and steel. And again, when we look at this beautiful facility today, we hardly remember how it started. We don't think much about the muddy parking lot anymore, or the 2x6s in the walls, or the rebar in the floor. We just see the complete whole. Yet we know what's beneath the surface. We know what holds the structure together. Well, why do I bring these examples to mind today? It's because I want to reflect with you on what we've done together over the past 15 years. Particularly, I want to talk about all the bricks we've laid that are not so obvious today, but which form a strong and healthy church. I'm talking about much more than the connector building we built together and the renovations and restoration work we did to the other parts of the property. Yes, those are great accomplishments. And I hope, I should say, I know they will serve you well for long into the future. But I'm really talking about much more than bricks and mortar or 2x6s and rebar. I'm talking about the church institution that we built together. I'm talking about the bricks we laid and how we placed them to create the institution that First Parish is today. I want to tell you something about something I learned early in my ministry and was a guiding principle for my leadership here with you. Yes, there was some method to my madness. It was not just shoot from the hip, not just stack the bricks up in any place, see what happens. There was sort of a plan, not as precise a plan as the architects drew for my house or our architects drew for the connector building, but still a plan. Many of you had great ideas for different aspects of the church. Many of you invested incredible amounts of time in particular areas of church life. Those are all part of the construction, and they are components of the church we built. But there were some principles of this construction that were primarily on my plate, primarily mine to carry, to hold as minister, mine to preach, not just in words from this pulpit on Sunday, but in actions and reactions every day with committees and the board and groups of individuals and individuals within and beyond this congregation. So where to start? Well, before you lay a single brick, you have to believe that you can actually build the structure. In a church, you have to believe you can work together to create what you want to be. There has to be a trust, not just in the minister and the lay leaders, but in each other. It took some time to create some of that trust here. If you allow me to continue the maybe worn-out building metaphor just a bit further, we had to prepare the soil for the construction. And it also took inspiration to get us going. You had to really want to reach that goal. We needed to believe in each other. And I want you to know that I have believed in you from day one. You know, when I came here, I had some choices. I could have gone to a church with less work, even one with more pay. I could have gone to one that was used to the style of ministry where the minister is the head of staff, where there was much more already in place and more uniformity of understanding. But I chose to come here because I believed in you, and I believed that we could work together to really accomplish something. That something being the transformation of what was a kind of rundown place in a community that didn't really have a clear direction, into a better functioning institution that not only benefits its members, but stands as a beacon of liberal values and religion in this community. Now, I have to admit, I might have underestimated just how long that would take, but it became clear to me that some things had to move slowly and carefully. We were making real changes, and changes take time to be accepted and become permanent parts of institutions. When I came here, I had no idea that I would stay as long as I have. You know, other than the brief time I spent in Framingham as an associate minister and a year in Wayland as intern minister, this will be the only church that I serve. I started planting seeds from day one when I got here, and I know I've tried planting some of them too soon. The soil wasn't really ready for them to grow yet. We made some changes early on, only on paper or at the level of the board or in some committees. And it took several years before many of these things could settle in and be accepted as a reality in the congregation. In this process, I learned you have to be invested for the long run and prepared for the fact that bricks are simply laid one by one. It became clear to me that even though we could do some good work together, say in 5 or 6 years, to make the big contribution, to make reality lasting improvements and changes, my ministry would have to be a lot longer than that. I knew that if my ministry was really going to take this church to another level, it had to be a long-term ministry. Another thing that I learned is that you have to try things and be ready to make adjustments. Not everything is just right as it's first conceived. And you can't be so invested in your original ideas that you're unwilling to tweak it to fit a particular situation. You know that I and we together have made plenty of mistakes in the execution. Sometimes we've fallen short in the details, but I think we've stayed on the path. We've stayed true to the mission, a mission that we wrote together in the first years of my ministry, which says our mission is to welcome all who seek a vibrant spiritual home where together we lovingly challenge and transform ourselves. Empowered by our congregation's rich history and our Unitarian Universalist tradition, we commit to courageously build a caring and just world. And we've done so guided by those words of that covenant that we say every week, and at least for me, comes more meaningful with each time it's said. Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. And we did so guided by the 7 principles of this faith, particularly the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice and compassion in human relationships, and the belief in the interconnected web of all existence. But you know, those are all great words. But there were so many roads you could travel on your journey to make those aspirations real. And there still are. And as much as this sermon is about sharing what guided my ministry, it's also a sermon about my hopes for the future of this church. The really hard part in creating a great church, which I believe we are, is not finding a way to implement this principle or that belief, but to embrace it all equally. To be a great church, you just can't choose one worthy aspiration and run with it at the expense of others. People have all kinds of ideas, and some will say things like, well, if you take care of this, the rest will just fall in place, or it's most important for the church to be doing this rather than that. And I don't believe or come not to believe those statements. Those ideas have not been part of what guided me. And now, while it's taken me a while, it brings me back to that reading from Dr. King that I shared with you this morning, with a quote from the 21st chapter of the book of Revelations. Again, not a book of the Bible that you'd find many UUs relying upon much. But when I read that particular passage, right about the time I was starting as your minister, it really spoke to me. You know, I went into ministry and even into my legal profession guided in a way by another passage which I held dear, which is from the book of Micah, which describes what's required of us, and that's to love mercy and to do justice and to walk humbly with your God. But when I encountered this passage from Revelation, I knew that it was the hook upon which I had to hang my work as a parish minister. I knew it had to be the test I returned to time and again when planning, working with the board, when figuring out what to preach on, or what area of church life to focus on next. Okay, so let me explain a little more. Dr. King's quoting from Revelation describes the New Jerusalem, and it says, "The length and the breadth and the height are all equal." In other words, this new city of God, or the city of ideal humanity, as he called it, is not an unbalanced entity, but complete on all sides. And what this taught me as a parish minister was that I could not ever just focus on one aspect of the life of the congregation. As I said, I entered the ministry through the door of social justice, and it remains my passion. I even had the joy of serving in one position that was simply dedicated to that ministry, Associate for Faith in Action, at a nearby church. But I came to know that that was only one aspect of a thriving church, and it had to be carefully maintained in a balance. So back to that reading and what I take from it. In John's version, the New Jerusalem, for our purpose, if we could call it the perfect church, there had to be great proportionality. It was equal on all sides. So the width, I'll call it, and the height and the depth were all the same. In a parish like ours, I see those dimensions like this. The width, or breadth, if you want, is community. It's the connection to each other. It's the welcoming of new people. It's the mutual caring and support for in the ministry to one another. It is the beloved community where we give as we can and we take as we need. We have worked towards becoming one strong community through many kinds of connections. Now, that doesn't mean we all can or should experience the very same things at the same time. It's not really possible or desirable to create community that way. It's not possible for us, for example, to all fit in the church at the same time. It's not possible for us as a community to vote on every single decision. But we connect in groups and across groups. We connect with many people and the same person in different ways. To grow strong as a community, there have to be meaningful individual-to-individual connections and connections in small groups and rich networks of connections across many groups. In our church, we've grown the community through things like our small group ministry program, our Caring Connection Network, our lay ministry, our youth groups, our Club UU, trips to Ferry Beach or Transylvania, the social events like potlucks, and working together on many projects from apple pies to auctions. This width is the indispensable base of the church, so necessary to support and maintain its other programs. New people must constantly be invited and assisted to make these connections. And the height, the aspiration, to me it's symbolized by the steeple. That steeple is broadcasting a message, not literally, not the spell tower, but the visual one, a message beyond this community, a message that we are reaching higher. Beyond and built upon our caring for and solid relationship to each other, we together as a church, often through our social justice programs and initiatives, speak out on issues of our time and reach out in service to those in need. It's the work of supporting domestic violence shelters, the work of anti-racism, the work with prisoners, the work to save our planet, the work to support the rights of GBLT folks, the work to help the children and the very poor of India. The height of the church is very important, but we must remember it must always be supported by the width of community if it is to last and stand strong. If a church is all height and no width, it topples over. And I've seen churches like that. If a church is all width and little height, it's a squatty structure, too short to have the beacon of its message reach out to others. It'll just be an inward-looking club, not really a church at all. And I've seen churches like that. And what about this third dimension, which I'm calling the depth? It's just as important. It's the nurturing of the spiritual in the individual and in the community. We have to approach our world with humility, with the knowledge of its mysteries, and an openness to how all people engage them. We must act from a place of faith, of higher beliefs, whether it's faith in a Judeo-Christian God or a humanist scientific approach, or a love-believing agnostic. And those three were just an example of three of the credos that I heard from this pulpit last week that our youth gave. From Vesper services to Wednesday night meditation, from spiritual conversations to adult education programs on spiritual practice, and world religions, from pastoral counseling to Sunday morning worship. We strive to go to a deeper place of meaning and spiritual connection. We all need not only to be connected to each other and working together for social justice, but we need to be connected to our God or that deepest part of ourselves, to the personal values and teachings which are essential for us to truly invest in this community. Without this dimension, we burn out. We lose the energy of our commitment to social justice. Even our investment in community becomes shallow. So, I guess the secret's out. These have been the three things that I've tried to balance in my ministry to this church over the past 15 years. It's the oneness and the proportionality of the church that I've always tried to advance in my ministry. I hope this is something you can carry forward into the future. For you as individuals to thrive, and for this church to thrive, you just really can't neglect any of them. I've seen many churches excel in one area but fall really short in another, and the consequences for those churches have not been good. There still are lots and lots of bricks to be laid, and they're laid one at a time. Each dimension of the perfect church must still grow and expand. But please continue to do the work with a sense of balance and proportion. My greatest joy will be to see this church many years down the road thriving as a real institution where the height and the width and the depth are all still in equal proportion. Be ours a religion which, like sunshine, goes everywhere, its temple all space, its shrine the good heart, its creed all truth, its ritual works of love, its profession of faith, divine living.